0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Donald Shields is from Malahide, but he was walking on Dollymount Beach in North Dublin under the shadow of the Poolbeg Towers. That's how most people would know it. Donald, it was Dollymount Beach in North Dublin this past Tuesday evening at 6:30. Glorious evening. What happened?
Afternoon, Joe. Thanks very much for allowing me to come on. Yeah, and apologies. It was actually Wednesday. My mistake. So we were just went down. We'd be often down in the park and in St. Anne's and in Dollymount a couple of times a week. Mm. So we were down around 6:30. In fact, we were just heading back around 6:30. It's just where the cars are parked on the beach. And there's kind of big rocks and boulders there to contain the cars. So as we were just kind of walking up there, we heard these shouts from two people. And then saw that a dog had escaped from a car on its lead, and it was a pit bull, you know, type of breed, tricolour pit bull, they call it. Wasn't an imminent issue straight away because it seemed to be heading kind of, well, not quite in the opposite direction, but you know, not near us, you know. But I thought, okay, as I kind of went to get towards my guys, literally within 2 seconds, he turned and come back and had pounced on one of my dogs. We had two. And was locked onto him on the back of his shoulder, effectively. The owner then appeared very quickly, to be fair, with myself. The two of us then grappled for about 10 minutes trying to get the dog to unlock from Bjorg, from my fella. It was a huge amount of effort and work, and certainly it wouldn't have been possible with one person. One person would not have been able to free the dog. The owner was very responsive. I mean, I had both my knees on the pit bull, and he had his hands right into the throat of his own dog and took a lot of cuts and as well. So my own fellow was obviously in serious distress and pain.
And what breed is Bjorg small?
Bjorg's a Maltese. Yeah, they're quite small. Yeah, they're feather like. They really are. There's no weight in them at all. Quite a passive kind of breed. Mm. So yeah, obviously it was extremely disturbing for me, for the dog, for my wife, the onlookers. So as we managed after what felt like a long time, and at one stage I didn't think we were going to get him freed. The owner turned to me and said, "Straight back to you." So my own guy, Bjorg, was completely distressed and was running away and whatever. So as I went to kind of pick him up and capture him, the guy who owned the pit bull and his partner disappeared in their car fairly quickly off the beach at speed, which was disappointing because he had actually done the honourable thing and a good thing and fair play, but really, he should have seen it through, and the concern I have is a breed like that, which are often called attack dogs, and certainly this was an attack. That dog didn't know it was going after another dog because my dog was stationary, and it could have been a child, it could have been an adult, it could have been a pensioner, it could have been anything or anybody. And if I was on my own, there's no way I would have been able to get that dog off. And I'm a reasonably healthy middle-aged man, and the guy that was there as well, the two of us were full throttle, trying to release.
You said at one stage, John, you were kneeling on the pit bull.
Yeah, I had both my knees.
Yeah, were you not worried about being bitten?
No, I really wasn't at that stage. I just, my big concern was just trying to get Bjorg released from this lock that the pit bull had.
And the owner put his hand in the pit bull's mouth.
Yeah, yeah, he did, to be fair.
Was he trying to prise open his jaw?
Absolutely, trying to prise the jaws open. And, it took some amount of effort. It really did. I'd heard about this kind of thing, but when you experience it, it is very, very different. And, clearly my own fellow was in huge distress and the noise isn't something you'd forget quickly. So, it was it was a shock, and
the
was
pit,
disturbing.
The pit bull, by the way, did he use the name of the pit bull? I know.
No, like they may well have, Joe, but I just couldn't. Okay. I really but couldn't was he, decipher was he, from.
Did he shout any instructions? Was the pit bull open to any verbal instructions?
No,
from its
no,
owner?
Absolutely not. No, this dog was out of control, and the owner was not in control. You know, that was very clear. And, you know, thinking back, the panic that they had when the dog cut loose, why were they panicking like that when the dog cut loose? And my only thought on that is that because they knew what was going to happen. They knew that when this dog cut loose, that something bad was going to happen. And it did.
But why would you bring... there's another question. I think you're asking it inter alia as well. Why would you bring a pit bull terrier to a beach which has children, obviously, by definition, on one of the warmest days of the year, and even though we're in the middle of September, or the beginning of September, why would you bring, and now they're saying, oh, we had him on a lead, but even if you had him on a lead, were you intending walking the dog on a beach which had
without
a muzzle, well spotted, and on a lead, that obviously those dogs are so powerful, could easily bolt away?
Well, it did. That's what happened. It did bolt away, and it wasn't muzzled. So we didn't certainly notice the dog before we got to where we got to, because we were coming to come off the beach, so we hadn't noticed. So I don't know how long the dog would have been in that car on what was one of the hottest days of the year, you know, and that is a concern. And like I say, the guy was honourable enough to jump in and was of great assistance. Like, my dog would not be alive today without him helping, but just disappearing is half the act, and it says it also reinforces my suspicion that this has happened before, because running away means you didn't want to face the music. And, you know, people have views about dogs, good or bad, but my more important view is this is an issue of public safety, and it needs to be addressed and taken seriously. You know, it really does. If people can't actually go onto the beach without being attacked like this, like that's because this, although I personally wasn't attacked, I was, because, you know, I owned that dog and I was in a position where it could have easily been attacked. And the dog could have picked on any number of people or indeed other animals that were there. It was
and you say
completely
that
out of control.
You were upset that the two of them with the dog kind of left in a hurry. What could they have done if they stayed? Do you follow me?
Yeah. No, well, I mean, at that stage we had the dog free, but I mean, there was €400 bill from the vet for the work that needed to be done to be able to patch him up and stitch him up and, you know, repair the bite marks on his back and repair the
skin. Oh, yeah, tell us about the injuries to Bjork. Sorry, my remiss.
Yeah, they're fairly severe, you know, and like, as Dennis, the vet, said, like, you know, you're very lucky because usually in these situations, the dog doesn't survive. And there was an incident some years ago in Donymount where a dog of a similar breed to mine was actually killed, you know. And I think it was by a pit bull as well. I'm not 100% certain on that. But I think if you can call it lucky that he had him by the shoulders and not the neck. If he had him by the neck, there was no way he would have survived, because the neck was an awful lot softer. His shoulders, I think, helped him, you know. But he lost teeth. You know, my own fella lost 3 or 4 teeth in it.
Nice.
And and serious puncture marks, you know, fairly big slice of skin lifted. And you know, obviously, psychological effects a dog would have after something like that, who knows? We've yet to see what effect that will have on him, you know. So it's pretty ugly, and you know, really, with no real rules bar, do you have a dog license? You know, it's wide open to happen again. That is a genuine fear that I would have with that particular breed, or any of those what are called attack dogs. Why would you want them in a built-up area, in what's a recreational area for the public?
Yeah.
It's not right, and it's not fair.
I was reading somewhere earlier. I know everyone goes into, if the weather picks up in Ireland, we go into dramatic mode, and we're like the Sahara Desert within 24 hours looking for water and all that kind of thing. But apparently, I was reading, I'm trying to get it back up again because I normally screen grab these bits. Apparently, dogs get very frustrated in hot weather. And the number of animal attacks increase in hot weather because the dogs become more aggressive. And then there was a woman killed in the UK last week by her two Labradors, and she had them on a lead, believe it or not.
Yeah.
So are you aware of, is that a theory, dogs get frustrated?
I am, because we carry water with us every time we go out with the dogs. I have a little shoulder strap bag, and we have a bottle in that that you pour the water into, or if I don't have it, we just pour it into my hand, and they lick it out of my hand, you know. So we're very aware of that, and we would often have water breaks as we go about, because that particular breed, the Maltese, aren't great with high temperatures. Anyway,
yeah, of course.
So
okay.
And we're aware of that. So, but certainly having dogs in cars on hot days, really, I mean, come on, having dogs in hot cars in a public area,
mammy,
really,
I know.
What are you thinking? You know.
So I didn't know.
Well, conversation that needs to be had, which is,
do dog owners know that in very hot weather like today, 27 degrees. Let the record show 27 degrees. What day, the 5th of September, wherever day we are, the 78th of September. And that's another day in itself, isn't it? A feast day. On the 8th of September, the temperature's 27 degrees. Do dog owners know that their dogs, if they're not hydrated enough, will become vicious or more vicious, depending. Liam Hannigan and Mallow, 0818 715 815, Joe at rt.ie. First of all, you have a tip on how to release the dog's grip.
I do, Joe, because I'm a farmer, and I have a border collie, and he's a working dog, and very determined and very protective. And if a dog locks onto another dog, waste the time putting your hand into his jaws trying to prise it open or trying to pull him away, because when dogs get into that, they're just so determined to lock on and not let go. So the tip is, Joe, is to, most dogs have a collar, to catch the collar, lift the dog from the collar and twist it. With the choking effect, the jaws will open and he'll leave go. But you must release your grip on the collar as soon as you can, because you could kill the dog.
Yeah.
But it got me out of a dilemma once or twice.
Now, Liam, were you aware of this theory that dogs become vicious, more vicious, in extraordinarily hot weather, like we have now?
Well, so they'd be under stress, I suppose, and if they're under stress, they're not themselves, and they could become vicious.
You're on a farm, are you, Liam?
I'm on a farmer, yes.
And how? I don't know whether you're tillage or stock.
Oh,
or whatever.
I'm dairy and sheep.
Okay. How do dairy cattle and sheep react to the hot weather and this there's a problem getting water?
Well, when they have enough of water, they're happy, and they also can take shade in trees, and you'll always see sheep under trees, the shade of trees, on a day like today. They're never out in the open. They do the grazing at night and take shade by day.
So they're quite smart.
Yeah, it's in their nature, I suppose, Joe.
Who's smarter, a sheep or a cow? Hope neither of them are listening.
They're both smart.
Yeah. I don't ask me. I was reading a book recently on sheep, and I came away convinced they were extraordinarily intelligent animals. Sheep more so than cattle.
Well, cows are very intelligent too, and they know what's going on the whole time, and they know their owners, and nature takes over the whole time, Joe.
Okay.
They'll take shade and they take shelter.
Well, but a cow can come at you. And do you seriously?
Oh yes, a cow can attack, and a cow has attacked me on a few occasions. Cows are better, more killers than bulls, because you
serious?
Wouldn't expect it from a cow.
And why did a cow? How did a cow attack you?
They'd be after calving, and they'd be protective, and they'd be
okay.
The hormones would be.
And what would they do? Give you what happened? They gave you ran at you, or gave you a buttered you?
No, they got me on the ground, and they cracked a few ribs. But I was lucky. I was able to crawl out of the gate. I was lucky.
Was this one cow or a few of them?
Oh, just one. All it takes is one. Yeah.
And they,
yeah,
they,
but that's farming. See, that's
I know.
Went to a pen and you look at the cow and you have a fair idea in no time if she's going to cause a threat to you.
And what about you were attacked on other occasions, were you? Were you serious?
I was, but I can't think. I got a kick in the face. All right, from the get.
Ah, for God's sake!
Right, from the time, but that's the choice of family.
But Liam, they weren't serious. I got a kick in the face from a cow.
Well, she kicked the gate, and the gate leveled me. The gate opened fast, and I got that into the face.
You got a whack at the gate in the face.
But it's an educator. You put your hand up in front of your face when you see that danger the next time.
Okay, face gate. Good God. And how with Liam, how are you now, by the way?
Are you carrying
many injuries at the moment?
No, I'm trying at the moment.
Thank God.
No, but most farmers go through some injuries now and again.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I'm talking over 20 years, Joe.
Yeah, okay, well, see, that's great, and thank you for all the...
And you forget the small ones, you forget the small injuries, you know, cuts and bashes and tears, you know. But farming is one of the dangerous occupations there is. Yeah, but I wouldn't swap it.
I know, but it's 24/7 and it's tiring and it's more than 24, it's 24/7, 365. The cows, the dairy cows don't know anything about bank holidays, do they? Or St. Patrick's Day or Christmas
Day.
No, they don't. Yeah, they're not that smart.
No, they don't. what else would you be doing, Joe, you know?
Okay.
Things are better now than what they were. You know, things are easier on farms from what they were long ago.
Will this nitrate EU instruction affect you?
No, because we have the land.
You have enough land, yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody was saying yesterday.
It will affect a lot of people, though.
That's
my neighbours.
Because they don't have enough land for the ratio of...
Yeah, they're tightly stocked.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Liam, thank you for all your work and...
That's just the tip. It's just to lift the collar and twist.
Twist, okay.
And I never rang in before, but I felt I had to ring in with that advice because of someone going to pick it up and get him out of trouble.
Okay. God bless you, Liam.
But
release
the dog as soon as you can because you'll choke the dog.
Okay. Well, good advice. Good advice. That's Liam Hannigan below in Mallow. Good. Liam, Bernie.
Yes, Joe.
You have another tip. By the way, do you know that on a day like this, 27 degrees, that animals become, dogs especially, become much more agitated and can be more prone to attack? Did you know that, Bernie?
Absolutely.
Oh,
yeah.
You knew it. Okay. I knew it.
Country girls.
Thanks for telling us. Anyway, tell us, what's your other tip, Bernie?
Oh, yes. Well, it's a tip I learned by mother's knee. If the dogs are fighting or there's a row going on, you get cold water, throw it over them. And they get such a fright, they will separate. Now, only for a second, but in that second you can catch them.
But it just means
you won't lose a hand.
Where would Donald have got cold water on Dollymount Beach? Where would Donald have got cold water on Dollymount Beach?
Yeah, well, Donald has to carry it with him. Somebody always has water.
But from Donald, from what you're saying, I doubt if that pit bull would have responded to cold water unless it's from a fireman's hose or something.
I think he would. No, I did it.
Well, that's Donald. Did you think of that, Donald?
I'll
come back to your sec, Bernie.
No, I didn't. I didn't. I mean, I would have carried water on me, but my two hands were occupied with trying to get my own dog released and trying to get... for me to get water out of the back of my bag that's zipped up would be just not practical. And in the middle of a beach, also, it's not necessarily something that's to hand, you know. And I would say, certainly with Liam, with what he suggested, it's a good tip, but you would not be able to pick up this dog with one hand. And the owner did, as far as I can remember, was trying to pull it by the collar as well. But,
would you have been able, Donald, it's all hindsight, but would you have been able to get your hand under his collar and twist it? To tighten the collar on him.
I don't think so. I think the freneticness of what was going on, and I think the sheer weight of the dog too, I don't believe one person would have been able to do any of those things on their own.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Okay, you mightn't get water, cold water handy on a beach, but you will get sand. Pádraig Yates, Pádraig, good afternoon.
Hey, Joe.
Good. Parik, what do you, you've normally talked to us about your incredible knowledge of history and social history. What happened? You have a dog, do you?
Well, he's dead now. I had a dog. Okay. He's my son's dog, really.
Okay.
But he was a little Jack Russell.
Okay.
Mainly Jack Russell, Mungo. And we took him out on the Borough Beach in Hulls, way out at the end. You may know it, near the golf course, okay. The golf club. Let him off the lead to run around. And the next thing I saw, these two greyhounds bounding towards him. Obviously, the owner had gone up ahead of us and he'd let his greyhounds off to get a bit of exercise. And I suspect they were coursing dogs because they were certainly very fit. They came racing down. My dog tried to run away, of course, couldn't. He did get in the water and that slowed them down. But eventually, I was wading in after them. They actually managed to grab him. One grabbed him by one leg and the other by another leg, and they're obviously going to tear him apart. Wow. They pulled him out of the water. By then, I was sort of still chasing after them. But once they got out, I just picked up handfuls of sand and I threw it in the face of the two dogs repeatedly, and it worked. The two dogs were blinded by the sand. I presume it hurt as well in their eyes.
So sand in their eyes.
Well, at the face, obviously, get it into the eyes as much as possible. Unfortunately, by the time I did that, I pulled my own dog away and their owner came down. And in fairness, he was very apologetic and he even offered to pay for the vet to fix my dog because my dog was quite badly bitten.
And
took him a couple of days to recover.
And it was two greyhounds, you say, that it...
Two greyhounds, wow. Yeah. They're obviously in training, I'd say, for races or whatever.
Oh, of course.
But yeah, instinctively, you know, they're beasts of prey and they saw prey. And they're obviously going to try to pull him apart as you would a hare. So it was quite a small dog. And so one had him by one leg, one by the other, and they were each pulling him.
Like a wishbone.
Absolutely, and it was instinct. It's what they're trained to do, so that's what they were doing.
And how was your dog? What was your dog's name, by the way?
Max was his name.
And how was Max afterwards?
His name was Maximus Barkus, but we always called him Max. It took him about 2 to 3 days to recover. He didn't stir out of his basket for 2 days.
I wouldn't blame him.
And then he sort of limped around the next day, and then he bounced back the way animals do. They recover much faster than humans.
While you're on, Powerick, the 110th anniversary of the beginning of the Dublin lockout in 1913, August 26th, was last Sunday week. Is there anything happening for the 110th anniversary?
Not that I'm aware of.
That's a pity.
We had hoped to have the tapestry on display in Dublin Port, but they could only take it for a week or so. And the cost, you see, that when we built, when the tapestry was made, it was intended as part of the new Liberty Hall that Bob Nolan knocked on the head. And there would have been a dedicated section of it for a museum and heritage centre in which it would have been one of the main...
Just remind people about the tapestry, Parik, how big it is.
It's quite big. It's in about, I think, 13 panels, large panels about 6 feet high by about the same in width. And it has, I think, 29... episodes from the lockout, and then there's a supplementary section on 1916, which was added in 1916. The problem is, because we thought it'd be on permanent display, we bought permanent exhibition cases for it, very strong cases. But it cost, the last time it was out, which was several years ago now, it cost over 2,000 euro to simply to transport and install. So the hope we'd had that it could go to sort of community groups or libraries or whatever, didn't happen. So a few people took it. Dublin Port were willing to take it, but we need somewhere permanent now for it because every time it's moved and installed and uninstalled, there's a risk of damage to it.
Now, it's such an incredible work of art.
Absolutely.
So many people involved, Bobby Ballard to begin with, but and yourself,
Robert
of course. Ballard
and Kathy Henderson, who died. It was actually being made. They were the artists. They were superb. But we had 200 volunteers, mainly women, but some men and school children from around Dublin and various schools.
And from all walks of life, including people who were in prison, they participated as well. It was incredible.
Yeah,
where is it now?
Okay. It's in storage in Liberty Hall. No, the only person who made actually two panels single-handedly was a prisoner.
Wow.
In Limerick. We don't know. All we know is we were told to call him John, which we did, but we never met him and we know nothing about him. And that was one of the conditions on which he was allowed to work on it. But his two panels are absolutely superb, as are all the others.
But just describe, one person made two... created this tapestry of two panels.
Created two panels of the tapestry. No, he didn't create the whole thing.
Yeah, no, I know that. But two panels are big panels, aren't they?
Oh, they are. They're about two... I'm trying to remember now. They're about 2 feet high, about 3 feet wide, and got on memory. But they're roughly those sort of dimensions.
And it's done stitch by stitch.
They were done stitch by stitch. Well, now, various techniques were used.
Okay.
But the main technique was stitching and embroidery as well. You know, so some of the things like... there's a lot of research went into it. We had to get the exact, the exact details, for example, of the cap badges for the DMP and the RIC constables who were in some of the panels. We deliberately... The DMP uniforms were too dark, so we had to lighten them a bit and put them green. Otherwise, it would just been too bad from an aesthetic point of view. But no, the tapestry is there. And if there's anyone out there who is interested in putting it on display for a long period of time, so we don't want to put it up for a week or 2 weeks.
Yeah, but you need a specialist. I'm thinking of, I was looking at their, they have a great livery on their vans, William Tracy. I've no idea who William Tracy is, but I just keep seeing their lovely vans, and they always have specialist transport. But you need someone like that to move it. It is so...
Oh, you do. So, yeah. And it's very expensive. And it's a small market. There's only two or three companies that do it. So if they want to, they can hold you to ransom. But as a 2,000, I'm sure it's much more now. So the costs are considerable. But if we had a permanent display area, it could be put in as part of the
reserves. It's so colourful. It tells the story of the lockout from beginning to end and all the major events that took place. Just to look at to stare at to reflect on the work, the workmanship and skill that went into it, is just incredible, and it should be on display. I was up, as I often do, I was up in Arbour Hill last Sunday week, and I was looking at the carvings of Michael Biggs, the proclamation of Askelga, and in English done letter by letter, 5,000 letters on the wall in Arbour Hill, and that should surely be designated as a national work of art. It is absolutely incredible, and believe it or not, I'm so sad, Pádraig, I went up with my ruler and my camera and pen and paper and pencil. What Michael Biggs did in that in Arbour Hill deserves to be seen by everyone in the country, every school child, such as the genius and the art of what he did, apart from the beauty of the words of the proclamation. Anyway, Pádraig, good to hear. Maybe someone will take up the whole thing and get that tapestry.
Yeah, feel free to give
of course.
I can send them pictures so they know.
Yeah,
exactly,
just tell them to go online. They can see it in all its beauty. Just put in 1913 lockout tapestry.
Absolutely.
Okay, Pádraig, it's good to meet you, Michael. Helen O'Dwyer, Helen Sparky.
Me too.
You come into me, Helen. Your line there, your line there is awful. Can you hear me, Helen? Okay, back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie. I'll come back to Helen later on in the programme when we get a better line. Ciarán. You there, Ciarán? What happened?
Hello, Joe.
How are
Thanks
you?
For the opportunity for the Sherman story of the day.
Okay.
So, basically, you're at the start of the summer. We had booked a 4-day holiday to Ibiza.
Mm-hmm.
Myself, my partner, four friends to celebrate two 40th birthdays. We were on the plane, and I was sitting at the very front, sort of about a half an hour into the flight. I went to the toilet and a friend phoned. The four of them were sitting together at the back of the plane and me and my partner were split. So a friend phoned, he says to me, listen, there's a girl here beside me is happy to swap seats if you want to come up and sit beside us.
Okay.
And I says, no, to tell you the truth, I'm studying for a degree. I said, I have a book here in my knee here. I'm going to get stuck into this here. He said, look behind you. He said, the girl's wearing a hat. So I said, fair enough. Okay. Went up and sat on the seat. Basically, within 2 minutes of me sitting in that seat, the guards were on the plane. Okay. And I was pointed out by a member of staff for to be put off the flight. Got put off the flight.
Now, where you? Got, okay, Karen, I'm a bit confused. Were you in the air at this stage?
This was on the this was on the runway.
On tarmac at Dublin Airport?
On the tarmac, guy. We were sitting for about a half an hour.
And what time of the day? What time of the day was it?
You're talking about maybe 12:30. So it was, okay. The flight was meant to go at 10. I was delayed for an hour. And then I got onto the plane and it was a bit of... just an odd bit of time waiting, but there was a few young ones on the plane listening to music and nothing, nothing much happening, nothing aggressive, nothing threatening or anything, you know. But the guards were phoned for them, and the guards came on, they pointed out 5 or 6 people at the start, and then took a wee break, and then she came up and was pointed the finger at 1, 2, 3, and the third person pointed at me. Hey, look behind me to see who was behind me. And it was not a girl. I says, you can't be pointing at me, can you? I said, I just literally sit in this seat here for two minutes.
Yeah.
But anyway, got off the guard said to me, marched me down the plane, got my bag back up again. Guard took me off the plane, standing outside. He said, you're not flying today. So, okay, I took into the airport. The wee guard, another different guard, said to us, you know, excuse me, you couldn't explain to me where you fit in this whole story here, because we're just, we don't mean to be rude, like, but there's a bit of an age gap, you know. I said, I know, there's no connection whatsoever, you know. So anyway, got up into the airport, offered, they accepted that it was mistaken identity, that I wasn't with the young ones that were put off, you know. They offered us the next flight out.
Any idea, why were the eight young people put off?
Yeah, they had like a wee speaker and they were listening to the music. They were in good tune. But there was nothing in it. Even the guards in the airport said none of them fitted the criteria of anyone that had ever seen put off a flight ever in their lives, do you know? There was nothing threatening. That was it. So we were sort of trying to say in the airport, like, these young ones were doing nothing either. And one of the guards, they said, listen, you stay with me. I ain't going to bring you here and get you sorted out. I can see this is a total accident here. There's been a mistake here. So anyway, she took us up to our desk, and first thing we went to, your man said, yes, put off the flight for unruly behaviour or disrupting the flight. I says, no, hold on here a minute. I said, you've got that all wrong here. He said, well, George put you off the flight. I says, no, George didn't put us on the flight. It was the cabin crew. George told us they had no power to overturn this. So after him saying that, I called the wee guard over. I said, excuse me, can I just get something cleared up here? Because this Ryanair manager is trying to tell me that the guards put me off the flight when, you know, I done nothing wrong whatsoever. She says, no, you know, it was his air staff. It was his air staff who done that. So well and good, he never spoke back about that. And he said, I'll put you on the next flight out to Ibiza, which was the following night at 6 o'clock, which worked out roughly 36 hours later, do you know?
Yeah.
So that was okay. We didn't know where to take it or not. We were sort of thinking, if we take this flight, have we no comeback? But again, got a bit of advice off a few guards, and they said, listen, take that flight, because by them offering you that flight, they're accepting their guilt, you know, because nobody else was getting their flight paid for. So well and good anyway. We got over to Ibiza, had the whole holiday. We're coming back again. We have 4 kids now, so we had to get the 4 kids, 4 young kids on a loader by. So we had to get the whole, there was a whole the logistics of trying to get that arranged, even for the 4 days, you know.
So when you were taken off the plane initially, I presume it was by the airport police, it was the same powers as the Gardaí in an airport. The 8 girls that had the speaker and a bit loud, they were much younger than you. Did any member of your family leave with you?
Yes, my partner came off with me.
Okay.
So she did, and the other two couples, they were going to come off, but we said, you know, there's no point, because there's no chance of getting 6 of us back out there. We'll stick as a couple here, and we'll see what happens. So anyway, I came back, started the whole complaints process, put it into them, and...
Well, Kieran, just can I ask? Sorry, for being, I'm just trying to imagine the scene here. I'm asking you for the choreography. The Gardaí come on. You're sitting. The cabin crew point out the eight young women, and the uniformed officers go down and say, "Pack your bags," and they do, and get off the plane. You're sitting. Mm-hmm. You're sitting, and they're humiliated, obviously. But you're sitting in the front row.
I had been in the front row, and then I went to the toilet. My mate phoned me then saying, "Do you want to swap?" So I ended up sort of towards the back. You know what I mean?
So you were marched off the plane. That's what I mean.
Yeah, I was marched down the front of the plane to get my bag where it was in my original seat. You know, and past everybody, like, and there was appealing to people on the way past. You know, listen, you see me walking up there onto that seat there, and everybody was agreeing. And we got email addresses of other people on the flights. You know. Who confirmed it, and they gave it their honour, and they took off the plane, standing there for 20 minutes, and really, I was trying to make my case to the guard, but the guard was just sort of saying to me that, you know, we don't really have any powers here,
they're there to
put us off, and we're just doing our job, you know?
They're there to enforce rather than judge. The judgment is left to others, but if they're told in good faith by staff that this is... Now, you mentioned, Kieran, you went into the loo. Did you go to the loo? Obviously, this didn't happen. But you know the staff are extraordinarily, and it didn't happen, so I don't know. I'm just making a point. Someone else could have done it. Did you vape or did you smoke? You didn't smoke in the loo, I know. Good God.
No, not a chance, no.
Okay. Because they're now obviously getting very strict on vaping as well. That didn't apply. That didn't apply. Okay, so what happened?
They have totally accepted. You know, I have it written in email form. Do you know that it was a case of mistaken identity, and there's an investigation going on against the staff members on the plane and all that day, and they offered a compensation of €240, and that was like a day and a half missed on a holiday. We had to...
Have a short holiday, by the way, remind people.
A short holiday, 4 days. It ended up, I had 2 days on it, you know. But we left the airport that day. Said to the guy, we just paid £350 down return from Armagh and a taxi. And we said, well, what do? There's no point going back up home again. We'll just get a hotel in Dublin there tonight, you know.
Yeah, of course.
Now,
yeah.
There was no help whatsoever. You know, you've heard of before where flights are delayed or whatever. Now, I put this down to... the equivalent of a delay, you know what I mean? Because they didn't get flan. It was none of it my fault, you know. It was down to, it was Ranner's mistake, you know. But you hear about people who, they give a voucher for the hotel, they get a voucher for food, you know, blah, blah, blah. It was not on the back for 6 o'clock tomorrow night. So basically the compensation that they have, they call it compensation, and sure, it doesn't even cover the extra expense that they was out, you know.
So what did Ryanair say to you?
They sent me an email saying the apology, and they accepted the guilt, and because that was one of the things I requested in the complaint. Most of all, I want my name cleared, that there's nothing sitting over me here, you know. So, and they offered €240 to cover the hotel and taxi in and out of Dublin Airport. So zero compensation for being threw off a plane, being humiliated in front of friends and family and everybody else. And the whole anxiety that I put my partner through, she never even enjoyed the rest of the holiday because of it. And then to add to it, on the way home again, when you're looking to get home to your four kids, we went to that morning, got up, the boarding passes were removed from the booking. We went to the airport in Ibiza. We were told, no, we can't fly, or you have to pay for your flight again, you know. So that was
And you say Ryanair tell us they're still investigating, but you say they, in correspondence with you, they have they've admitted that it was a case of mistaken identity.
Oh yeah, they've admitted that, and they've said the only thing they're liable for is the receipts that they were given for the hotel in Dublin on the taxi back and forward from the airport.
And I presume, you see, the dilemma you're in as well, and anybody, I presume, if you're accused in the wrong, your initial reaction is to protest that they're in the wrong, and then that can become heated as well, especially as you are innocent. But anyway, It's not a nice situation to be in. But anyway, I know because Ryanair, close to being the biggest airline in the world because of their popularity, they are going to, I'm not saying this is a mistake, but things like this are going to happen, unfortunately, but it's how they react to it. So let's see what Ryanair say in full, Ciarán, and kind regards. I'm sorry your holiday was cut in half, to say the least, apart from the...
No problem. It's just, you know, I'm glad I'm getting a chance to highlight sort of their arrogant contempt, you know, for their passengers. Do you know, like, the way I think about it is that if somebody's... I know people who's had a flight delayed for 24 hours on automatically Ryanair have given them €1,800 or whatever. Well, the equivalent's happened to me on more. Okay. Plus the degradation of marching up and down that plane and walking along the runway out of it, you know, it's the equivalent. Okay. So the Ryanair, do they only give compensation for faults when it's the airport's fault or somebody else? But when it comes to a fault of their own, they don't stand over it. You know, the offer they give is insulting and sort of, I think it just makes their whole eating apology sound hollow that they're doing the bare minimum, no more.
Okay. Well, many people, they carry nearly 100, well over 100 million people a year at this stage. That's how big they are. Okay, we'll try and get more information. Thanks indeed, Ciarán,
and thank you very much to you
and your family. Kind regards, joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Listening to the music there, I'm reminded that our guest on The Meaning of Life on RT1 television this Sunday night at 10:30 is the legendary three-time Eurovision winner, Johnny Logan. He talks openly and emotionally about the loss of his parents, his two brothers, his relationship with his father, the charismatic Patrick O'Hagan, how his father's faith influenced Johnny throughout his life. Sean Sherrod, by the way, is his real name. Johnny reveals how he still maintains connections with his late siblings and father while he's on stage, and what he wants for his own funeral when the time comes. And he speaks about, especially honestly and candidly, about his struggle with what he called intrusive media, which in the past, he says, caused anger and deep hurt for him and his family. That's Johnny Logan, 10:30 Sunday night, The Meaning of Life. Now, Patrick and Dean are father and son. I think this is... I cannot believe there's not more examples of this happening. It's everyone's nightmare. It's not the end of the world, but in terms of where you are at a particular point, it's a very, very... challenging hurdle to get over. Patrick, what happened? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. What happened was we have had a problem with the leaving cert and the CAO offers. Okay. My son, Dean, had received his leaving cert results
on
25th of August, like tens of thousands of others, and he'd done very well. We were very happy. We knew where he needed to be points-wise and courses of study. So the following Wednesday, the CAO round one comes out, and he didn't get any offers. And when we checked, we saw he was actually had sufficient points for a lot of his courses.
Okay.
But there was no offer. So we went on and we checked on the CAO portal. This is their website, their portal. Logged in, checked his account, and there were no leaving cert results recorded on it.
Okay.
Which meant that the colleges didn't get his results, and therefore no offers were made.
So what's going through your head when you realise this?
How can this happen? This is...
Well, you knew he did his leaving cert.
Absolutely. We knew his grades. We knew his points. He was able to calculate those.
His results.
They publish the point thresholds for all of the courses on the same day. So we could see the courses he was eligible for, and we're wondering, why did he not get any offers? So, and how come his leaving cert results are not on his profile on the CAO?
Okay.
So we contacted the CAO help desk, and they came back to us to say that they were missing his leaving cert exam number. And they advised us that he hadn't entered his exam number, but it was missing off his profile. And that's a lot of weight on a young man to be told that. that you have no CAO offer when there's no exam number there.
And but hang on, they were able to tell him the results of his leaving certificate. They were able to communicate the results of his leaving certificate.
Yes.
The State Examination Commission.
Correct. The State Examination Commission.
So they knew who he was.
Absolutely. And the CAO know who he is. And they have his information. They had even communicated it to the universities. Colleges had emailed him directly to say, we are in receipt of your application and we're just awaiting your results. But the results never filtered across. So this meant that he had no offer of a college place at all.
And what did he leave? So he's sitting, in his CAO application, he didn't put down his state exam number.
Yes.
Isn't that
it's
correct?
Missing. Yeah. That is correct. It is missing from
is there any other way for the CAO to get his results if they don't have a state exam number? And the one that you got the results, obviously.
We got the results, yes. And
the CAO were saying, well, we can't get them because he didn't put in his number.
Exactly. They can't match it up. Now, the exam number seems to be the critical piece of information that the whole system pivots on. That's the key piece of information. But in their system, they don't stop you from going forward. From when you first set up your account, they don't stop you and say, here's your critical information. You need this before you can proceed.
A red asterisk doesn't pop up and say, you've not completed, as you do on an airline booking or whatever, you've not completed all the relevant questions or answered all the relevant questions. That didn't come up.
No, that doesn't come up.
Yet the most critical piece of infrastructure on that form is that number.
It is.
Without that number, that form doesn't hold.
Exactly.
That form is void, collapsed, non-existent.
Yes.
But you're adamant when I forget or skip or accidentally press the return button and move forward too quickly, if I forget to put on the exam, my exam number, it doesn't, a red light doesn't flash and the CAO accept the computerised document, even though it's absent, its most critical piece of infrastructure is missing.
Yes, it does. Okay. It proceeds without it, even though they need that for the whole thing to operate.
Now, do they come back to you and say, where's your number? The email, obviously, they can, by return of email, have an email address now, and they say, there's your CAO form, but where's the number?
The CAO sent out an email in about March saying that their action required, check your account. There may be some information missing. There may be an exam number missing. Now, my son Dean saw that a while later after it came out, and subsequently to that, he rang the help desk and he was getting his password updated. He spoke directly to the operator there. Mm-hmm. He asked, is everything all right now? Is my account okay? They told him, everything's fine. Now, bear in mind, these are 17, 18-year-olds who are stressed. Officialdom.
Stressed.
Absolutely. You're talking March, April, May, they're running into their leaving cert. They're doing projects, orals, exams, their mocks, everything else is going on. So he had called them, he'd spoken with them. They told him, yeah, that's okay. There was no further communication to say that there was a problem with his application or any information was missing. That's important. And even on their system, when you make changes, it is the CAO, people apply for course changes. When you make a change on the system, they send you out an email confirming your changes. And on day one, when he set up his account and they sent out the email to him to say he had set up his account, here's the information, it didn't show that his exam number was missing off that.
Yeah.
It showed that if you hadn't filled in a second telephone contact number, it shows a blank space for that. But it has no mention of your exam number for 2023. doing your leaving cert, which is the whole point of it.
Okay, and Dean, your son, is on the other line. Dean, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Sorry this happened. Dean, have you heard of anyone this happening to anyone else?
I haven't. No, as far as I know, this has only happened to me, but I mean, I can't understand how this hasn't come up before. It seems like such a simple thing.
And by the way, did you, if you're having your leaving cert, you didn't do your junior cert, did you, with COVID?
No, I didn't. Okay. I didn't sit a junior cert.
So you don't have that experience of submitting exam numbers and invigilators and waiting for results and...
No, nothing like that. It's a totally new process for us.
So bottom line, what happens now, Dean? Well, can you do law this coming academic year?
Well, we don't really know where we can move from here, Joe, to be frank. I can be resubmitted to the second round of applications for my CAO courses.
Okay.
But these CAO courses they're in high demand. Like, there's not even a guarantee that they will move to a second round and accept second round applicants.
That's a good point, because everyone could accept, especially
exactly.
And that's exactly. That's the only option open to you.
It is. It's either that or to wait a year and to reapply to the CAO. I'm completely left at a loose end by this.
Yeah, but you don't want that, do you? Well, sorry, we are where we are, but that's the least. That's the worst option, isn't it? That you have to take the year off. I know it's not. The end of the world.
No, but it's no small thing either. Like, you know, taking a year out, it not only has academic repercussions, you're graduating later, but, you know, there's real financial repercussions as well. You're sitting at home for a year when you should be studying, when you should be progressing with your life.
I know. And I cannot believe it hasn't happened to other young people, that when they're putting in the CAO form, they left off bits of information, including their state exam number, which the CAOs are saying is the foundation. Everything else collapses if that number is not in it.
Okay.
Did they send you a warning? Again, it's all email, I presume, is it?
Yes, it is. Yes, there was that email that my father mentioned that I had received, telling me that there may be information missing from my account and that I needed to sign into it. I then contacted the CAO directly, clarified passwords, clarified application numbers, logged on to my account, and to the layperson, to me, it appeared everything was in order. There was no indication, once I had signed into the account itself, that anything was amiss.
Okay. Now the CAO the CAO say they sent you out emails saying, well, your dad alluded to them there, you've had, alluding to the fact that you'd left out a piece. They didn't, as far as I know, tell you which piece of information. By the way, do the CAO, Dean, as far as you know, have your home address?
They do. They have my home address and my mobile phone number.
Like, what's... Given that there's so few people who... But I think it's very understandable, by the way. But given that there's so few people that leave out the CAO number... And they have the address. Could a CAO not post you a letter? Which people take much more seriously than one of the 4,000 emails that come in from every direction. Could they not post you a letter and say, it costs €1.20, it's the best value in the country. Could they not post a letter saying, and put urgent on the letter?
Exactly.
Which means it gets into your house, into your system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that stands to reason. And I mean, even after this point where I had signed into my account and I had reviewed everything, clarified my password, clarified my application number, I continued to be in contact with the CAO. I made course selections. Okay. I received emails from universities that they had received my application. To me, the entire appearance of the process was that everything was running smoothly.
And they never said to you, listen, this is void because you haven't given us your number. What's the point? Okay.
Exactly. Other than that initial email.
By the way, were you going to travel to college, hopefully? In other words, accommodation, I'm thinking.
My accommodation has been seriously affected by this. In order to be eligible for most I'm sure all universities on-campus accommodation, to which I applied to quite a few of them, and I was lucky enough to receive on-campus accommodation in my favourite universities. I had to decline those offers because I was not a first-round applicant.
Okay, so it's the domino effect is kicking in, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it has. Okay. It's
so
totally
is it a minute after midnight next Sunday night, Monday morning, that the second round comes out? When does the second round actually hit the screens?
I'm not sure to the exact time.
Go ahead, Patrick.
At 2 o'clock next Monday, Joe.
In the morning time?
Two o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, yeah, during... Okay, well...
Yeah.
Maybe, Patrick and Dean, it's up to you. Maybe you let us know what happened at 2 o'clock next Monday.
This
must have happened people before, students before. If it did, what was the outcome? I'm asking listeners, what was the outcome? Because to me, people have made mistakes filling out forms. And in the world we now live in, you're told, go back, well, not accept your form. You didn't put in your security code or your full address or your air code or whatever. But in this case, you actually got into the system, you start beavering, your results start beavering the way around the system, and then suddenly it's all for nothing because you haven't got that number there, even though there's an address and a phone number. Okay, the digital world. Pat, Dean, I'm so sorry this has happened to you. It's an awful blow.
Thank you, Joe. It's important that we felt it was important to highlight this. And although Dean mentioned that he's not aware of somebody else this has happened to, I have spoken to a career guidance counsellor who said they are aware that this does happen to people due to errors and omissions. Okay. And that person is also aware that the CAO have a workaround where they send files on later on to the universities where errors and omissions have been identified for students to be included in further round offers.
Okay, so stay there.
It seems to be a historic problem.
A couple of more questions after this break. Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe at rt.ie and 51551 is our text. Maria Owens. Maria, good afternoon. Your son, what happened to your son?
We're in the same position as the last, as Dean. But my son, he had his number in, his exam number, but the CAO said that he hadn't ticked a permission box, which gives them... the State Examination Commission transfers the information over to the CAO. So basically he didn't get any offers either because he hadn't ticked a box.
But why? So they're saying you filled out a form in detail.
Yep.
You've sent it to us, but we still need your consent.
From one state body to access the information to a transfer to another state body.
So this is GDPR gone mad again.
Gone mad. But he didn't get any email to say there was any difficulty with his application. The first we knew of it was last Wednesday when he got no offers from the CAO.
They're simply saying, and there was no barrier saying you cannot proceed until you fill out all the boxes. Absolutely not.
None, no.
Surely that's easily... programmed into an application form.
Well, you would think so. Like the last man said, if you were checking in for a flight, it wouldn't let you proceed unless you had all the correct details.
Or booking
it would
a
jump
flight.
Back.
So how is your son?
Well, he's okay. Like he's fine. He's anxious now for next Monday. Yeah. We have been in touch with the CAO, and I have to say they were really helpful.
Okay.
It's 10 days of extra pressure on him.
But the CAO are saying, we've now put him in the mix for the second round.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, but the second round, depending on the course and supply, demand, there mightn't be a second round in terms of numbers in some courses.
Absolutely,
it's full from the first round.
Yeah, then that's just the chance. We have to. We just have to wait and see now.
By the way, Maria, did he say why he didn't? How well, so many of us do it. Don't know through, yeah. how he missed a little consent box, probably less than 0.1 centimetre squared. How he missed a consent box.
Well, he's 18. He said he didn't see it. Now, he said he got a copy of the CAO. He said he went back and looked at the CAO. He said he still didn't see the box. So my husband went and had a look. He didn't see any consent box.
Okay.
But, you know, unless it was, I don't know.
Well, fingers crossed now for Tuesday afternoon. Is it Tuesday? No, two o'clock.
Monday
at 2 o'clock, yeah.
Yeah. But okay. I know of other students that have had not put in their exam number either, and so Dean's not the only one out there.
Yeah, but then if it is common, there should be a fail safe built in saying you cannot submit this form until you fill out whatever is missing.
The mandatory.
I know.
Yeah.
Okay, Maria, difficult time. Thanks to thee, Maria. Thanks,
thank
Patrick.
Thanks, Joe.
Dean. Joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe@rte.ie. Sinead, another potential flaw you've spotted in the CAO application form. Sinead.
Hi, Joe. Yeah, it's an awful scenario for Dean, and I'm very sorry for him. I have four children, three across the line, having the Leaving Cert under their belt. But I think it's really important to note that CAO applicants are invited to open their CAO account in the first week of November, or thereabouts.
Yeah. I hear the answer.
And I suppose the prompt to do that is the fee. It's a reduced fee, or, you know, it's €30 or thereabouts.
Yeah.
So, but the exam numbers are not sent to the school and then given to the students until January, just before their mocks. Now, certainly in my situation, that with my three children, that was the scenario. So I suppose the flaw here I would see is you're allowed, or you're invited to open.
Encouraged with a monetary reduction.
Yeah, and, you know, for students who are very focused, they can put in their, you know, CAO choice, course choice, and, you know, once their fee is paid, their information is in, and they feel it's done and dusted. Then, you know, they head down, they get on with their studies, and then, you know, January, just before their mocks, they're given their exam number from their school, issued by the SCC, and then they possibly use that then, depending on whether mocks are done internally or whether they're sent out. But that's the first sight of their Leaving Cert exam number. So it's very easy for a student who has opened their CAO application back in November. It's a very simple mistake to make, because they're focused on, you know, mocks, and then they have their orals, and then they have projects, and then they could be doing grinds and, you know, revision camps, and a very easy omission.
Yeah, okay, a lot of stress, and the minister Norma Foley made allowances for her, because she said that this year I'm making allowances for grade inflation, and one of the things I'm taking on board is that this is the first state exam. All of the young people have, unless they're repeatedly leaving, obviously, all of the young people have sat. So I'm making some allowances there, but it's a pity. Anyway, we'll find out more, but that's well spotted, by the way, that when you're told, if you want to get your CAO form early and apply early, you can get it done and save a few bob, but they don't ask for your exam number. And it turns out that if you continue and your exam number is not submitted on the final form, the whole bridge collapses.
Okay,
Sinead. Okay, thanks indeed. Sinead, where's Helen? Helen was online at the beginning. And,
hi.
What happened? It was your dog, Sparky.
Yes, hi, Joe. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, loud and clear, yeah.
Yeah, he was actually, you know, he was actually attacked and torn apart in front of us on the beach in Bettystown, mid-July. Very traumatic experience.
Oh, he was killed?
Yeah, well, he actually, his injuries were so horrific.
Oh, that's what I mean. Oh, my God.
He had to be euthanized afterwards.
Ah, that's awful. That's awful on him and on you.
It was, yeah.
And who attacked him? Who attacked him?
It was. I heard one of your earlier callers talking about greyhounds. It was a Saluki breed, which is a similar kind of a sighthound type dog. It kind of circled behind the back of us. But I think, Joe, not only I'm trying to raise awareness here. It's not only about dogs off the lead causing kind of fear and nuisance to a lot of people. It's about That dog in particular was with fosterers who were trying to do their best appealing. Okay. You know, there was an appeal, there was an emergency appeal to take the dog, the two dogs, which were Saluki hounds from a particular rescue centre. And the dog in particular, we heard afterwards from the rescue centre, had been locked in a shed for 3 years of his life, beaten and starved. And so he went out into the community. And I'm not sure with what kind of due diligence, but he went out into the community to a family, foster family, trying to do their best to save a dog. And this is what happened. But, you know, so there's two things I suppose I want to highlight. It's about dogs off the leads and in public spaces and the fear and the nuisance they cause. And also the regulation around rescue centres, you know, with this risk with emergency release of dogs into the communities, you know, without the poor dog. I mean, the attacking dog, I wouldn't blame the attacking dog, but we asked for the dog to be euthanized and he wasn't euthanized.
By the way, how long had you got Sparky?
We had Sparky 13 years.
Oh, yeah, that's part of a family, isn't it?
He was, yeah.
Oh, God. What breed was Sparky?
He was a little Papillon dog.
Oh. And do you...
He's a little gentle, little fella, you know.
And he never attacked anyone in his 13 years.
Oh, absolutely not. Yeah, absolutely not. The dog came up behind the back of us. He was on his lead and as usual. But, you know, there's an awful lot happening down on the local beaches at the moment. Two days ago, there was reports of two Rottweilers attacking two ladies with their little dogs who had to hold the little dogs above their heads to save the dogs. To save their little dogs. So there's a lot happening down at that beach. So I'm really trying to create awareness here, Joe, by ringing you about... you know, like the local bylaws, for example. I'm trying to, you know, lobby to try and get a bit of, you know, airtime around this to try and get the beach. The beach is a place for everybody. The beaches, Ireland's beach is a place for everybody. Yeah. Whether you have a dog or you don't have a dog. So that's why.
And again, the hot weather, as we discovered today, does affect dogs and their temperament if they don't have enough hydration or water. Thanks indeed, Helen, and that awful story of Sparky, which her companion for 13 years. Sheila, quickly before we go, did CAO, you say the missing number happened to you before. What was the outcome, Sheila?
The outcome was basically my son, he liked that. Did well in his leaving cert. He got no offers on the day and he was absolutely traumatised. Turned out his number, his CAO number, hadn't been put in, but nobody had contacted him. Eventually, he did get a second round place, but unfortunately, like your other person, he'd lost his accommodation. His accommodation was forfeited and he had to go. He was going to Athlone and we were unable to get other accommodation. He travelled up and down between bus and train every day for 3 months, but actually, it was the reason he dropped out. The travel was, it was brutal in the winter and it was an awful winter as well.
Because of it,
he couldn't get accommodation and it was just the domino effect. So it has happened before and, it's clearly still happening.
Yeah. Okay, let's see what happens on Monday at 2 o'clock, but it's a bizarre scenario that could easily be fixed. Good to meet you, Sheila. Sound, James Feeney. Broadcast coordinator, Shane Gavin. Series producer, Annette Egan. I'm off to Belfast this weekend to record another Meaning of Life, one we're very excited about. We've been a long time trying to secure it. We got it and we're doing it this weekend in Belfast. But in the meantime, the one with Johnny Logan is on Sunday night at 10:30 on RT1 television. And Ray Darcy is next.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.